The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It's Monday, February 3rd, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Hope you had a great weekend. We sure did. Mine started on Friday with my birthday. I want to give a shout out to Lindsay Reinhart and Lori Duckworth and all the friends down there in Southern Oregon who helped to put together a great birthday party for me. And then on Sunday, last night, it was Herb Thrasher's birthday party, and we had a good time over at Herb Thrasher's house. We got to watch the Super Bowl, the Super Duper Doobie Bowl, whatever it was, where the Seattle Seahawks absolutely dominated Peyton Manning and the Broncos. We'll talk about that more tomorrow on Thrasher Sports Live at 8 p.m. Tuesday night, but I'll just let you know, we had a really, really good time. You can see some of the pictures on the Instagram account at RBShow420. Brian the Red was also hanging out with us. We'll talk a little bit more about that in Hour 2's Toker Talk Radio. For today's show, we've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the show, like we do every Monday, to answer your live questions on cannabis science, culture, history, and health in our Cannabis Q&A segment. We're going to ask him about that report that's going around about the British woman, Gemma Moss, who supposedly overdosed on marijuana, at least according to the coroner out there. We'll ask Dr. Mitch how possible that is. Also, we're going to look into the tragic real overdose death of Philip Seymour Hoffman from a brand of heroin called Ace of Spades. We'll talk to Dr. Mitch about that. And naloxone, the miracle cure for overdoses from opiates that needs to get a little bit more attention. Also on today's show, we'll have time for a radical rant. I wrote an article this weekend after talking to my friends from Idaho who tell me now is the time. If we want to get medical marijuana in Idaho, we've got to jump now. They've got 3 months to be able to do it. It'll cost a little less than $100,000, really. And if we don't act now, it's going to be a whole lot harder in the future. We'll tell you why in the radical rant. Also, President Obama doesn't seem to understand what his powers are under the Controlled Substances Act with respect to rescheduling marijuana. So I'm going to give him a little refresher course in Behind the Headlines. We'll take a look at Title 21 of the U.S. Code and just what powers does the president have when it comes to rescheduling marijuana. We've also got your 420 radio news, and in hour two, I'm going to bring you my presentation from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference with the slides. I'll be showing those on the web screen. Stick around. The news is next.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today. 420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Hey, Tokers and Tokettes, Radical Russ here to introduce you to my friend Matt and all the staff at Lush LED Lighting. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED Lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. If you thought LEDs were... meet the tech of today. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Let's just say I appear at a lot of events with the masters of indoor horticulture, and the harvests I saw from Lush LED Lighting were big, tight, sticky, and very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent ya. Double your rewards and lower your expenses with Lush LED Lighting.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, February 3rd, 2014, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition. I'm Russ Belville. President Obama on Friday reiterated his belief that marijuana is no more harmful than alcohol. Obama said marijuana can be subject to abuse like alcohol, but it is a public health challenge. The racial disparity in marijuana arrests concerned the president, saying, quote, that it is a problem, end quote. The president referred to legalization in Colorado and Washington as experiments and that his Justice Department will be concentrating on keeping those experiments confined to those states. Obama also echoed the concerns of the anti-legalization group Project SAM that legalization would bring about, quote, big corporations with lots of resources and distribution and marketing arms peddling marijuana, end quote, and that, quote, the levels of abuse that may take place are going to be higher, end quote. But when pushed on whether his administration would support the removal of cannabis from the list of Schedule I drugs, Obama stated, quote, what is and isn't a Schedule I narcotic is a job for Congress, end quote. California has another marijuana legalization initiative in the works for 2014. The California Attorney General has approved the Marijuana Control Legalization and Revenue Act, or MCLR, for signature gathering. Fiscal analysis of the measure shows the Golden State reducing law enforcement costs by $100 million per year and generating, quote, a few hundred million dollars annually related to the production and sale of marijuana, end quote. Americans for Policy Reform is spearheading the campaign and says it already has $500,000 in funding to collect 500,000 signatures by June 30th. California rejected legalization in 2010 under Prop 19, but today polls show 52% support among Californians for legalization, a figure that rises to 60% among likely voters. MCLR would legalize adult cultivation of 12 marijuana plants with 6 flowering per residence and allow possession of all the marijuana produced by those plants. Hemp would also be legalized, nonviolent pot prisoners' cases would be reviewed for release and expungement, and commercial regulations would be promulgated. Pennsylvania Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Hanger is shocking the establishment with his openly pro-marijuana legalization stand. Hanger told Philadelphia Magazine, quote, 300,000 votes will win the primary. This issue will get me at least 200,000 of them, end quote. The Penn Law grad also cast off calls for decriminalization, saying, quote, the waste of money on criminalization doesn't end with decriminalization. You still keep marijuana in the underground economy and you don't legalize and you don't tax, end quote. Hanger points to 2 million Pennsylvanians, 500,000 of them with debilitating conditions, who are affected by marijuana criminalization. Hanger estimates that Pennsylvania spends $300 million a year on marijuana prohibition and would raise $200 million a year on marijuana taxation. Hanger also feels legalization is an issue of racial justice, noting that African Americans in Philadelphia are 5 times as likely to be arrested for pot as whites, even though rates of marijuana use by race are virtually identical. Normal, Nebraska is trying to get medical marijuana on the ballot for 2014. The group has proposed a constitutional amendment that would allow the private non-commercial growing, consumption, or distribution of cannabis, also known as marijuana, by any patient with a doctor's recommendation to use cannabis for a medical reason. The petition will require 125,000 valid signatures by July 1st, and Normal has 175 circulators out collecting signatures. The most recent poll done in 2002 showed support from 51% to 64%, depending on the wording of the initiative. The amendment would need a 50% plus one majority vote to be added to the Constitution, unlike the amendment in Florida that will require a 60% vote. New York officials believe they can get their medical marijuana program up and running in about a year using marijuana supplied by the federal government. Nirav Shah with the Department of Health testified that the state will use the dormant 1980 Olivieri law to allow medical marijuana use for research purposes at 20 hospitals statewide. State Senator Diane Savino, who has long fought for a medical marijuana law, doubted that the FDA is going to grant a waiver for New York to use U.S. government pot and wondered why New York needed to start with just research when marijuana is being used medically already in 20 states. Shah thinks the government will relent because New York will help prove marijuana's medical effectiveness. Quote, "The evidence that we provide will be of such high value and done at the statewide level that it will be enough for the country," end quote, said Shah. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, February 3rd, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available exclusively at the National Cannabis Coalition. Visit ncc420.com and download today. When we come back, we'll go behind the headlines to take a look at President Obama's comments regarding the rescheduling of marijuana and just exactly who has the power to do that. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio.
I'm a reefer smoking man.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
Medical Marijuana Radio with Larry Love from Santa Fe, New Mexico, every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, and 3 p.m. GMT, right here on 420radio.org. Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. It's just about 15 after, and apparently President Obama doesn't know he can reschedule marijuana. You know, President Obama is a tough guy to figure out on the marijuana issue. He famously admitted he inhaled frequently. That was the point. He wrote about taking total absorption hits with the Chum Gang back in the day. He even said that the war on drugs is a failure, and I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws about a decade ago when he was running for office. And then he became president. And the issue of marijuana legalization was mocked, maligned, and ignored. President Obama's DEA committed more dispensary raids in one term than his predecessor did in two. There were memos that seemed to indicate a willingness to allow regulated medical marijuana, and then there were memos that walked that back a bit, and now lately we've got memos that give Washington and Colorado the encouragement to work on their legalization. Well, now, in an interview last week with CNN's Jake Tapper, the president had even more encouraging things to say about marijuana policy. And I quote, "I stand by my belief on the scientific evidence that marijuana for casual users, individual users, is subject to abuse, just like alcohol is, and should be treated as a public health problem and challenge," end quote. Obama said his main concern is the criminalization of marijuana use. Quote, "My concern is when you end up having very heavy criminal penalties for individual users that have been applied unevenly and in some cases with a racial disparity," end quote. He continued, quote, "I think that is a problem. We're going to see what happens in the experiments in Colorado and Washington. The Department of Justice under Eric Holder has said that we are going to continue to enforce federal laws," end quote. All right, now it's fantastic to hear from the president that he's got a recognition that marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol. Just like he said a few days prior, this is very critical to defining a rational drug policy. Right now, cannabis is currently listed in Schedule 1, alongside heroin, PCP, and LSD as dangerous drugs of abuse with no medical benefit, while alcohol kills far more people than all illegal drugs combined and isn't scheduled at all. So what does President Obama say when asked about reconciling his belief about marijuana's relative safety to alcohol with his administration's policy that marijuana is as bad as heroin? Quote, "First of all, what is and isn't a Schedule I narcotic is a job for Congress," end quote, Obama said. And here I thought the President of the United States, who's chief of the executive branch and therefore boss of the Attorney General and the head of the DEA, might have some influence in the matter, but I guess not. We have to rely on Congress that can barely pass a budget and shuts down the government, and we have to rely on them because back in 1970, they passed the Controlled Substances Act that put marijuana in that completely illegal category. Oh, well, too bad, so sad. Got to move on, nothing to see here. And wait a minute. Yeah, I've actually read the Controlled Substances Act. I know I'm kind of a nerd. Specifically, Title 21 of the U.S. Code, Subchapter 1, Part B, Section 811, Subsection A2, which reads in part, quote, "The Attorney General may by rule remove any drug or other substance from the schedules if he finds that the drug or other substance does not meet the requirements for inclusion in any schedule," end quote. If he finds, if the Attorney General finds, nobody else has to weigh in on this. No scientific panel, no congressional hearing, nothing. If the Attorney General finds a drug does not meet the qualifications for inclusion in a schedule, he can remove that drug. Now, the only catch is he can't violate a treaty while he does it. But moving cannabis out of Schedule 1 would not violate the International Narcotics Control Treaties. So why do you punt on rescheduling, Mr. President? In your State of the Union, you castigated the do-nothing Congress and asserted that you're going to use your executive powers where and when Congress won't act. You could remove marijuana from federal drug scheduling altogether with the stroke of a pen, but you're going to delegate that to Congress? Your signature wouldn't even legalize marijuana, because every state would still have its marijuana regulations in place. So if you really believe marijuana is no more harmful than alcohol, then failing to deschedule it like alcohol And passing the buck to Congress is just petty and cruel, Mr. President. What a cop-out. The guy could sign it himself. We could be done with this.
Yeah, so could have any of the past presidents, but no, not gonna do it.
Not gonna do it.
Not
be president.
Gonna do it.
Not at this juncture.
No, right now, wouldn't be president. I know it is prudent. Safety break.
For a safety break. It's 20 after. It's union rules, folks. We'll be right back with Bacon Dan and some Daily Toker tunes.
South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs, get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up!
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Well, I'll say little recollect. Darling, your words to fails. Little red carpet, you need a love that's gonna lay.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancer, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence in suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects from medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reaction, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairments, appetite increase, and in some U.S. states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana, it's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Monday, and that means we got Bacon on the screen and Bacon on the phone. It's Bacon Dan. How you doing, Dan?
I am doing very well, Russ. How are you today?
Well, I'm fine, and you sound so much wiser now that you're in your 30s.
I know. It's a weird thought. You know, of course, how did I spend, you know, my first week of my 30s partying out a lot and going to burlesque shows and, you know, just living a normal, you know, Portland lifestyle. So,
yeah.
But I'm much wiser doing it.
Not a whole lot different than your lifestyle of your 29. Really?
You got me there.
I guess not. Hey, did you have a good weekend as far as Super Bowl Sunday? Did you get to watch the game with some folks?
I actually worked, and it was very dead in the restaurant, and so it was bad. But, you know, hey, it was, I mean, I was totally not expecting the Seahawks to win. you know, of course, I wake up to the sad news about Philip Seymour Hoffman, so that kind of had me down. But, you know, all in all, it was a pretty fun Super Bowl Sunday, and still got to go out to Sinferno last night, so can't complain.
Right on, right on. All right, so we've got some music here queued up for Roots Monday, and I wasn't sure if this is one we'd played already or if it was one that was waiting in the queue or we skipped it 1 week. Can you tell us about this track?
Yes, well, this is one that we did skip for 1 week. This is Parumspeller. The song's called Booty Swing. I actually heard this song at Sinferno a few times. It's a new kind of, they call it electro swing. So it takes swing music, takes a lot of the fundamentals of jazz, but then it kind of updates it a little bit. The guy who produces it is an Austrian DJ, and when you hear it, yeah, you can kind of picture this being played with, you know, go-go dancers dancing around and red lights and smoke and everything. It's just a really fun track, and there's a few girls, Dantes, that I may or may not love to watch dance to the song. So.
That's a very, very Portland intro for sure. We've booty swing for all the booty dancers out there. Bacon Dan, thanks for calling in, man.
Thank you.
Here we go. This is Parav Stellar with Booty Swing.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Drug Policy Facts, starring Doug McVeigh from Portland, Oregon, Tuesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific on 420radio.org.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, everybody, time for our live cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a cold but good day.
A cold but good day. A lot of cold snap going around the country. Everybody try and stay warm. Avoid the frostbite. We have got so much to talk about here, but I want to remind everyone that you can get your questions in via our chat room, and our moderators are helping people with the little Q icon, so it makes it easier for me to find the questions. Thank you so much for that. Or if you feel like it, you can call in live, ask your question directly at 971-533-7111. But we always open things up by giving Dr. Mitch the first word to tell us what's latest in the world of cannabis science.
As you mentioned, there's this case allegedly of a young woman dying from cannabis overdose in the United Kingdom. I just want to point out that, as my grandmother used to say, this is the dumbest, assest thing I've ever heard.
That's a your scientific medical opinion.
Would be around 2 pounds, and I just do not believe that the pathologist has investigated what really needed to be investigated in this, under these circumstances. And then some newspapers are just saying, you know, trying to generalize this, that there will be 33,000 deaths annually from cannabis. I mean, this is like saying that suddenly people are going to be ODing on water. It just does not make any sense pharmacologically at all. And I can walk folks through the animal data and point out that this cannot be done. If there's some incredibly rare heart condition that would be induced because cannabis, you know, increases heart rate, even then I just cannot fathom that this would actually be lethal or that it would turn into 33,000 deaths. So I really want to dispute this kind of insanity.
Yeah, that's the thing is, and what seems to be nice about this is the reports that I've read on it, both in the UK and the United States media that are covering it, seem to treat it as being very ridiculous. They quote all these different doctors from different specialties and different locations who all say, come on now, the marijuana toxicity. You know, I did some research on dogs. I got the question about whether or not dogs could die from ingesting marijuana, as that was a story that was going around. And I found some papers, you know, where they were doing clinical studies, and they found these LD50 rates at something like 130 milligrams of pure THC per kilogram of dog weight. I started to do some of the math on that, and it seemed like, wow, that's a whole lot of THC to kill a dog. I mean, if we had the ideal circumstances, we could pump pure THC into a human being, is it theoretically possible to kill him?
In fact, it is theoretically possible, but it would literally take the equivalent of like a pound of the just best pot ever, and you'd have to inject it right into your vein.
Yeah.
And even then, it's that would be the LD50, so it would only kill half of the people.
Right. Right.
But you know, who's going to do that? That just sounds ridiculous, and what a waste of pot.
Yeah, and that seems like, you know, are people going to great lengths to try to find a death, where in other tragic circumstance that happened over this weekend, we find Philip Seymour Hoffman, the latest victim of heroin overdose. The authorities find him with a needle in his arm, 5 empty bags of heroin, and something like 65 full bags in his possession there. And there's been some concern about this particular brand that the authorities have been seizing, this Ace of Spades. Can you speak a little to heroin overdose? And I know that naloxone is something that people are just starting to hear about that maybe they should learn more about.
Well, so, I mean, I'm ready to weep over this Philip Seymour Hoffman predicament. This is such a tragic waste of human life. The opiates are incredibly dangerous, as we've discussed before, and the fact that naloxone is not available to people really breaks my heart. So naloxone is basically something that will get in to those opiate receptors and kind of get the heroin out of there, so to speak, and prevent this shutting down of the respiratory system and the things that lead to death. And that should be available everywhere. I mean, people should be able to get that over the counter. It would prevent these kinds of deaths. If he had had that, he could have, you know, put that, somebody could have given that to him even intranasally and probably prevented this. But in fact, that's under such incredible tight wraps for literally no reason. It's not psychoactive. It doesn't have intense lethal dose or anything like that. But even, you know, handing that out when people are at needle exchanges or things like that has been so controversial because they're afraid it's going to actually keep people using when they're already using. So it just drives me nuts in such a heartbreaking way.
And it sounds to me, you know, in a situation like this, he's someone who, I would imagine, had some experience with this. I've read some accounts of him having a previous prescription pill problem, and then having to get off of that. Now ended up on heroin. How much of prohibition makes it so that even someone who's an experienced heroin user really doesn't know what they're getting when they're going to shoot up?
Well, and what's sad is, so this Ace of Spades brand, now every heroin dealer on the street is now putting a little Ace of Spades on their little bags in hopes of taking advantage of this kind of backhanded publicity. And unfortunately, like any underground market, folks have no idea what they're getting. And when you confront heroin users about this, they say, oh, I know, and I have this insight, and I can taste it and stuff like that. And it is complete nonsense. Mm. There is absolutely no way to know what's inside there. And that is very much a product of prohibition.
Yeah, it's just a shame. And it's a shame that we lost Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's somebody whose work I really respected. I was asked one time, just kind of facetiously, if I was going to cast someone to play me in a movie, who would I cast? And it was Philip Seymour Hoffman I thought of. Even going back to his work on Boogie Nights, I kind of thought of the guy, but that's a shame he's gone. All right, let's get to some questions from our chat room. Our first question comes from John Thomas, and he wants to know, what abuse do you think Obama is worried about? How do you abuse a near harmless substance?
So what's funny is the definitions are this ever moving target, and so the idea that use of heavy machinery or driving after use would qualify as abuse. I can understand Obama being concerned about that. That's you know, actually a data-based, relatively realistic concern. But then this notion of dependence or tolerance, I mean, we find that so laughable, but the tolerance questionnaires, the withdrawal questionnaires, tend to be just these laughable things like loss of appetite or strange dreams or things like that. I mean, this is nothing compared to actual dependence to either alcohol, the opiates, or even tobacco. And so I feel like Obama's got to say what he feels like he needs to say. But, you know, it's second term, dude. You're not going to become president again. Why not go ahead and come on out with this? and say, guess what? This really is as harmless as everyone's been saying.
Yes. We have a question from RRU96, who wants to know, can CBD oil alone without THC be useful in healing, or are both components required to work synergistically?
At least from the data we have so far as epilepsy and seizure are concerned, CBD alone could be helpful. And some of the insomnia literature suggests that CBD alone might be helpful. But I just hesitate to try to bank on that for some of these more serious illnesses. When I think about Ray Michaela, when I think about people trying to fight nausea and things like that, CBD oil alone is just not going to do the trick.
Okay. We have a question here. Let's see if I can find it, from Gothic Prophet, kind of a follow-up on John Thomas's question. He wants to know, why don't the prohibitionists and rehabitionists acknowledge the difference between abuse and use of marijuana?
What's funny is, at least, you know, back a couple decades ago, they were literally taught any use is abuse. And that was kind of a theme song in this alleged prevention literature. And so they don't understand why anybody would want to alter consciousness. And these are the same people who, you know, pray and speak in tongues and things like that. So I mean, I find their insights a little bit awkward, given that they think that literally any use is abuse. And it's sad to say, but I think they don't understand that caffeine is altering consciousness, that alcohol is altering consciousness, because they're familiar with that. And it's just this wild xenophobic, oh, this is what the foreigners do, I don't want to go anywhere near this, it sounds creepy to me. When, in fact, if everybody came out, they would know plenty of people around them are using cannabis already and have no negative consequences.
That's the kind of talk we got all the way back to the Nixon tapes, when Art Linkletter was saying, you know, people drink to be social. They can have a drink or two and not get drunk, but people that are using dope, they're using it to get high. And I'm thinking, what's more social than a joint circle? You got a bunch of people passing. How could you be more social? All right, let's get to a question here. Kaylee Austin's got an interesting question about edibles. If you have a slow digestive system, will that affect how edibles work in your body? I don't seem to get high from edibles that affect others.
And in fact, that is the case, and we're finding, actually, as edibles are moving into the older adult communities, and with medical cannabis proposed in Florida, this is an issue. If you don't have the appropriate gastric enzymes, you're not actually going to get the same impact from edibles as somebody who does have those gastric enzymes. And so I think there are going to be a subset of folks who really have to turn to vaporization instead of moving to the brownies.
You know, I'm going to add a follow-up on that, because I live here in Portland, Oregon, the land of the, you know, anti-glutites, the anti-lactites, the vegans, and the ovo-lacto-vegans. And oh my God, there's so many different dietary styles and lifestyles out here. Do we find any correlation between someone who's, say, gluten-sensitive and maybe they're ability to process edibles or any of these other dietary conditions?
So the funny thing about this is it goes all the way back to William O'Shaughnessy in the 1800s, when he was British, but he was down in India, and thought that perhaps vegetarian animals were more sensitive to cannabis than non-vegetarian animals. But other than that, we don't really have any data as far as gluten sensitivity or any of the other dietary things are concerned.
I smell a Dr. Mitch survey coming here, and Portland would be the perfect place to take on something like that. I could round you up a few vegan pot smokers.
I got to admit, this might be my big opportunity to come to Portland and give everybody a standardized dose after they've either been eating meat or not for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, what an interesting study that would be. Okay, we have time for one more question, but if you didn't get time to get your question in, remember, you can send them in by email to 420research@gmail.com. If you forget that, just go to the 420 radio page, and we've got a contact form that you can use. Our last question here comes in. Let's see. There it is. Gada DeVita, gotta love the name, says, Dr. Mitch, I have a friend with hip and shoulder pain. He has a liver condition and can't take any anti-inflammatories. Would raw cannabis in capsules be okay for him to consume?
In fact, we don't see the same liver problems associated with cannabis use that we do with the anti-inflammatories. But I feel like raw cannabis in a pill is an awful lot to digest, and could easily lead to excessive dosing, whereas a small vaporized dose might actually be an easier way to get a feel for how is cannabis having an impact on these symptoms.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for your questions here on our Cannabis Q&A. We do this every Monday. So join us next week and learn more about cannabis science, culture, history, and health with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch, thanks for being here. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right, folks, when we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant, talking to some of my friends from Idaho, and you won't believe how relatively cheap it is to get medical marijuana in Idaho. I'll tell you when we come back.
Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. It's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay, read the Weed Blog today. 420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
Can I take your order?
Give me 15 cheeseburgers.
Can I take your order?
Can I pick your number?
Can I take your order?
You got any egg?
Can I take your order?
Man, I don't have any money.
I don't have any money.
All right, well, go.
Man, watch out!
If we're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana and the next thing you know, they got 10 years, they've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, there's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
Good day, Tokers and Tokettes. Radical Russ here in Ashland, Oregon at the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference. And I'm telling you, place is packed. It's standing room only. You're going to walk in here, you'll see some familiar faces, maybe some unfamiliar faces. Imagine you can see the place is packed. Yeah, consulting services. So as you can see, quite busy. A lot of people filling in now. The event starts in about a half hour, so we still have some time. I'm seeing security safes and dispensary consulting and two different testing labs I've seen here so far. We'll take a look in here in the main event area now. And as you can see, we're going to have ourselves a pretty big event. And who should appear on the camera as always?
But always. Well, there's a camera. Hello.
That's Inigayo. And it's also Alex. How you guys both doing?
We're doing good,
doing
man.
Good.
How are you? I understand you're sold out for the day.
Yes, totally.
And so we're going to do this here. We'll do this in Eugene in a couple
Eugene
months.
Eugene, March 20th through the 21st in Eugene. Plan ahead.
Yep.
OMMBC.com.
Yep, and it should be about three times as big, and we could sell out to that event too, so get your tickets.
Right on. And so we will have the speakers starting here at about 10 o'clock.
Yes.
Yep. And we will have some interviews for y'all later.
Woo!
Right. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
Take it easy. And there's our own Lindsay Reinhardt, who has transplanted herself from Idaho to Oregon, just like I did. So how does it feel?
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. Ready for the conference?
I am.
All right. So how have things been for you since you've moved to Memphis?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
I really enjoy it here. It's beautiful.
Nice to be free.
Yes. I love it.
Any hassles with medicine or being able to...
No. Ever since I've been here, I got medicine the first day I was here, and it's just kind of progressed from there, and I'm out of my MS attack. Clearly, I feel better. And
I was going to say, you look great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I know how that MS is when you're unable to get quality medicine. I remember seeing you back in Idaho. I couldn't even touch you.
Right.
So this is really great.
No, this is a different world for me. Even like looking around in here, coming from a world of like black market and it's all hush-hush, to like seeing how they're explained all of the testing. Todd Delotto just explained to me, you know, a sativa versus an indica and how you have to test like the DNA of the plant. And I thought that was really interesting. So I'm just kind of like, you go from this world of no testing, there could be mold, contaminants, pesticide in your stuff, to we have this down to such a science that, you know, we can tell a plant from Chicago, it came from Oregon, and, you know, it's pretty neat.
Wow.
Pretty neat stuff.
How's things going for Undergreen Rail though?
Wonderful. We have already moved about five people who helped move Dahlia from get her out of Tennessee into Colorado, and we've got six more that we're raising funds for. So if anybody's curious about that, they can go to our website. That's undergreenrailroad.org.
Excellent. Any media interest in this?
Yes, lots. I got to talk to CNN this last week, and I also got to talk to CNBC. So awesome. People are definitely interested in this whole exodus of leaving one place that you know everything and have everything you know and love to going absolutely to a completely different place for medicine that people
right.
are just learning about.
Well, thank you, Lindsay, so much. Good
thank
luck
you.
With everything. We'll see you at the rest of the conference.
Awesome.
Like I said, a lot of people here at the conference for us to talk to. We'll be doing interviews all day long. We'll also stream live as best we can from the media center. It's in the back here. So head back there and get ourselves set up, and we will talk to you again very soon. Radical Russ here from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference.
You want answers?
I was mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
When I read these stories lately of families flocking to Colorado to get cannabis oil for their epileptic children, I sympathize with their journey to a strange new place. I'm a Red State refugee. I hitched a ride on the Undergreen Railroad back in 2003 to escape my birthplace of Boise, Idaho, for the lush greenery of Portland, Oregon. Since then, some of my friends from Idaho and Alabama, Pennsylvania, and Florida have also left their homes, families, jobs, friends, and schools for Oregon. Most of them have sincere medical need that forced them out. Others are like me and just refuse to continue living somewhere so hostile to our lifestyle. One of the refugees is Lindsay Reinhardt. She's a multiple sclerosis patient who'd had her kids taken from her over her medical marijuana use. She had been the chief petitioner for Idaho's medical marijuana initiative, but when faced with the threats to her family from the justice system, she moved to Southern Oregon. Lindsay has now taken the concept of Undergreen Railroad and turned it into an organization dedicated to hooking up patients looking to move with caregivers who have rooms or properties to rent. If they can raise some money for web coders and designers, they'll also be able to collect data on the income and education demographics of the refugees and show their states just how much talent and economy they're losing to this medical migration. Since Lindsay's moved, however, it's been tough going for the campaign to get medical marijuana initiatives on the ballot in Idaho. The state Senate passed a resolution declaring they would never, ever, no way, no how, legalize marijuana in any way whatsoever. It's a symbolic measure, and marijuana is already quite illegal in Idaho. I mean, you can get a misdemeanor and jail time for just being high in Idaho. But by gum, they just had to tell off all the states surrounding them but Utah how evil their so-called medical marijuana is. And lately, even Utah is looking favorably at CBD oil. The city of Boise has made sure that the two-year-old Hemp Fest is now impossible to produce this year. Police and prosecutors paid extra special attention to the I-84 corridor that connects Boise to Ontario, Oregon, just 50 miles away. They shut down Ontario's 45th parallel, the only clinic/dispensary within a three-hour drive. Now, since Oregon is the only medical marijuana state with no residency requirement for patients, sick people in Idaho often made the trip, and many of them got busted coming back home. I still hold out hope for Idaho. My folks live there, and my dad's on a lot of pills that could be replaced with vaporized herb. The disappointing thing is that the initiative's written and could get on the ballot this year with a comparatively low signature count of just 53,751 signatures. But there's no money for signature gatherers. Now, a well-placed source tells me that for somewhere between $50,000 and $75,000, they could do it. And the polling 3 years ago by Boise State University put support for medical marijuana in Idaho at 74%. So it could win. If I only had $50,000 to $75,000. Imagine a state like Idaho going medical and locking in the entire Northwest in the same year that Florida opens up medical in the South and Alaska and Oregon and maybe California and Rhode Island and Arizona legalize recreational use. Wow. But time is running out. The campaign in Idaho would have just February, March, and April to gather signatures. It can be done with paid petitioners, but it's impossible with volunteers. Plus, after this election, petitioning law changes in Idaho, so they can't just get the signatures in the Boise metro area, where 40% of the state's population lives. Next time, signatures will have to be gathered from at least 6% of voters in 18 of Idaho's 35 legislative districts. Now, there's 12 districts in the Boise-Nampa-Caldwell metro area, so the next campaign will have to pay petitioners as far as 250 miles east in Idaho Falls and as far as 400 miles north in Coeur d'Alene. In the meantime, educational efforts continue. Just yesterday after the Super Bowl, there was an in-depth TV news piece on the Fox affiliate on medical marijuana patients in Idaho. It told the story of a man who has brain cancer, who was given 90 days to live, who's still alive 2 years later after treatments with Rick Simpson oil. And they'll be, like I said, came on after Super Bowl Sunday, and his latest CAT scans show him to be cancer-free. Also, CNN and CNBC are showing interest in the Undergreen Railroad story, and don't underestimate the libertarian, rugged individualist streak of Idahoans. Some of my most conservative, redneckiest relatives would vote for medical marijuana. I hope someone with money steps up soon to surprise us all and punk Idaho's legislature by passing a medical marijuana initiative this year. That's all the time we got here for hour one, but stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We've got a few other stories to talk about, including a comparison of the California initiatives. There's four of them now for legalization of marijuana. Also, our Fan Friday trivia contest. We have a winner, but we didn't have a show Friday, so we'll announce that coming up next. The replay of my presentation at the Cannabis Business Conference down there in Ashland. Going to replay it with the slides on the screen instead of just the long shot of me in my head. Hey, that's all the time. Like I said, for Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us from Rolla J Studios live in Portland, Oregon. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalrus.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you